Hey, it's getting closer and closer.
Pitchers and catchers on February 12th.
Which is 2 days before the college baseball season gets underway.
We are less than 2 weeks till pitchers and catchers. Let that soak in for a second.
That's right. And a day over 2 weeks for guys that in the future will be part of pitchers and catchers reporting, like Emerson Hancock and Cole Wilcox.
In fact,
they've already reported. They've already reported, and they're already practicing.
Pitchers and catchers and all the position players. They've reported.
That's right. All right, our man Bill Shanks. By the way, BravesCentral.com. You can get all the latest Braves info and Bill's thoughts and everything else, as well as you can hear Bill on the Bill Shanks Show down in Macon and Warner Robins, South Central Georgia, 93.1 FM in Macon, 98.3 FM in Warner Robins, also 105.9 FM. Bill, when you're saying your radio stations, and you're saying I'm on blank station, what's the what's the one that leads the way? Is it 93.1 FM?
Yeah, and we're actually, David, in about 2 months going to have 93.1 FM cover all of Macon and Warner Robins.
Oh, cool.
And then we'll really have two frequencies. We'll have 93.1 in Macon and Warner Robins, 98.3, which goes from Perry down all the way to Ashburn, south of Cordele. And 98.3 can be heard. We had somebody the other day tell us they heard it in Albany, which I don't know if we must have had it turned up too high. We can hear that in McRae and Americus. It's a really big signal. And then we also are going to have 93.1 in Rochelle, which we hope and believe will reach Tifton. So we'll have basically two frequencies, three different individual frequencies, but on two different numbers, 93.1 and 98.3. That'll be from Forsyth all the way down near Tifton. And so that'll cover a huge area down I-75, but we'll kind of knock out that 105.9.
That one's going away. I was going to ask you what that one covered.
Yeah, eventually that'll go away. So that one's covering Warner Robins right now. So we're just going to. I'm getting a little too technical.
No,
here.
You and I. See, I love this kind of talk, but right. I know we're.
And you think all Bill does is talk break?
Here's the thing, though. Bill just took me, and I hope. Maybe you, Logan, I don't know, people listening. He just took me through a nice little stroll through Middle Georgia and South Georgia with all those towns he was naming there.
It's a lot.
Yeah, so I like that.
We cover a large area. I mean, it's great to have the frequencies we do, and it's kind of a little network of frequencies. And we from Forsyth to Tifton is about 120 miles.
Yeah.
So it's a rather large area, but we're going up on a TV tower with our 93.1, which, as you know, Dave, will give us a little bit more of a signal. So that's why 93.1 will allow us to cover more than just Macon and Bibb County. So we'll have two 93.1s, but we'll only have to promote the 93.1 and 98.3. So we're looking forward to that.
Have you? I don't know what you've been doing this morning. Have you been listening to us? Any?
I have not.
Oh. Okay, good. Good.
I do once in a while, but I love listening to you guys.
I wanted to give you some. Life. You always say you like to steal stuff from us for your show, which we always appreciate.
Yeah.
I've got something for your show today.
Okay, good.
Because it's local to you. And thanks to our man Jason Hasty at the. There we go. There we go.
Well, Tommy John.
I love it.
Lucy Bell wants to go outside.
Lucy Bell.
Jason Hasty at the Hargrit Library here in Athens reminded us that today is the date of the very first Georgia football game back in 1892. It was here in Athens. It was a 50-0 win over Mercer. And not picking on Mercer, but I know a lot of your listeners like the Georgia history and Georgia stuff. So today, yes, it was played January 30th, a 50-0 win, Georgia's first ever game back in 1892.
Wow. And all your listeners will be glad to know that David and I were not covering that game.
Bill, what was it like on Purdy
Field? Exactly. Let
me
tell you, the damn food in that press box that day was terrible. And the Wi-Fi was just, I was just complaining to Claude Felton the entire game.
I'm just trying to figure out how they played around the fountain.
Exactly.
makes no sense
exactly.
to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, Claw didn't take over until 1897.
That's
so we
true.
Had trouble with the SID that day.
That's right. Coach McGill. He was like, letting him have it. Coach McGill, the Wi-Fi here is terrible.
Yeah, and Coach McGill was on his phone trying to see what Jack Bowerly was up to, so he was really pissed that day.
I know.
You boys are getting, y'all are getting in trouble, man. Y'all
that's
need to
so
pipe
funny.
It down.
1892. That's a very cool little note, though.
Yeah,
anyway.
That is. I will talk about it.
Yeah.
But real quick, we wanted to tell Bill also, we stumbled upon another note in the media guide about a mascot that we don't know if you knew about that happened in Central Georgia.
Oh, that's right.
The mascot, now this is pre-Ugga. This is when the Bulldogs were not the Ugga, not the Siler family. But what was his name, Butch?
Yeah, Butch. This was pre-Ugga, as Logan just said. Butch from 47 mm-hmm. to 50. And he was an English Bulldog brindle, owned by a man in Warner Robins.
Really?
And yes.
Oh, Bill, this does not have a happy ending. Just
this is in the media guide.
Sit tight real quick.
Yeah, no hearsay. This is in the media guide. So basically, the gentleman's name was Mabry Smith. He agreed to loan Butch to Georgia during the season, along with a female puppy, although who ended up passing away. But anyway, it said Butch continued to serve on. So I guess there was really Butch and this female Tuffy, although she passed away, so she never got to be part of the mascot chain. But anyway, Butch continued to serve. But in the off season, Butch would be in Warner Robins with Mr. Smith. But in 1951, Butch was tragically shot by a policeman in Warner Robins after the dog escaped from his pen and found roaming the streets.
Wow.
So anyway, it says Butch is buried behind Smith's business along Watson Boulevard in Warner Robins.
So we wanted to make sure there were no police officers with the last name Shanks and Warner Robins in 1951.
But as I reminded Logan, you're not from Warner Robins, so there.
No.
Is Watson Boulevard, is that a prominent street in Warner Robins?
Oh, yeah, that's the prominent main street.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that's the, and it's behind where in Warner Robins?
It just says behind what was his business. Now, granted, this was 60, 70 years ago, so I don't know what that means.
We need a shrine to that. I mean,
yeah, well, maybe there is one somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. There may be. Wow, that's I did not know that.
So the Georgia Bulldog mascot was shot and killed on the streets of Warner Robins.
That's awful.
Yeah, that is.
That's awful. Boy,
that's what
that
happens when you read, like I
feel.
Said, the small print in the media guide. You find out stuff like that.
Yeah, really. I mean, Claude's probably pissed we haven't read it before. <He's>
probably... No doubt. All right. Anyway, we were talking about pitchers and catchers reporting. I want to ask you to take us on a little bit of a dive here into the Chris Bryant situation and the ruling now that he is actually going to be under Cubs. What am I trying to say?
Control
for 2 years now instead of one. And does that make them more likely or less likely to want to trade him? And how do the Braves fit into all of this?
Well, I think they're going to try to trade him, but I've been told the Braves or do not like his defense, and that as of now, their plan is to allow Johan Camargo and Austin Riley to go to spring training and battle it out for third base. If by some chance Bryant and or Nolan Arenado are still available and the Braves did not feel confident that either Riley or Camargo could do a good job as the third baseman, they may revisit it. But from what I've been told, as of now, that doesn't seem to be a possibility for this team, and they're going to go with what they have. So, I'm in a pickle, and I don't like being on a fence on anything because I do love Austin Riley's potential. I've talked with you guys about it for a couple years, even when he was in low A for crying out loud. I really think the kid's got the ability to do very well and to have a very good career, and we saw glimpses of that last year. And I think that Camargo is determined to come back and be what he was 2 years ago, which was a pretty good starting third baseman, by the way. He wasn't Josh Donaldson as far as defensively or offensively, but he was pretty good. Didn't have the power that Donaldson had, of course, but he had 19 home runs and 76 RBI. But, you know, but it's, boy, I tell you, you're right, Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado in a lineup, the Braves, and it's just hard to not be tempted to do that, you know. So, But we'll see if Alex Anthopoulos is tempted. But as of right now, I don't think they're going down that road. I don't think they're a serious contender for Chris Bryant.
You know, let me ask you this, too. If you're talking about his defense and saying he's not good defensively, then you're already penciling in Ozuna in left field. Although he did, like, I'm confused on what his defensive prowess is. Is he a good defensive player or not? Because didn't he win a gold glove? But at the same time, you hear the knock on his defense.
Right, yeah. Evidently, Dave, he had a shoulder injury the year after he won the gold glove.
Okay.
And his arm is not very good now because of that shoulder injury. And you know, we had a Cardinals reporter on right after he signed with us on the show, and he said he's just taken so much of a downturn in route. And just in his instincts, and it's not good. And so that was the first thing I said when I was told that, well, the Braves don't like Bryant's defense. I'm like, well, they just signed Marcell Ozuna, you know.
Yeah. And so would that hinder Bryant a little bit, because you feel like you've already taken a little bit of a hit defensively. You don't want to add to it. Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I think so. And I wonder, and I don't know this, but I wonder if possibly, if they had not signed Ozuna, if Bryant would have been more of an option for them in left field, because he can play left field too. Hmm. And I think their issues with him are more at third base than left field. So I don't know. I don't know. I just love the bat, and we need to remember, for all that Mike Foltynewicz gave up in the first inning and how bad that ended last year. A big reason why the Atlanta Braves didn't win in that first round was what they did with runners in scoring position in those five games, which was awful. And that was the offense that included Josh Donaldson, and they need that lineup to be very, very good. And you know, I just read before I came on with you guys about how the Dodgers are looking at Mookie Betts here, and that's getting maybe a little serious. I'm like, you look at the lineups, and Camargo, O'Reilly are going to have to really come through for this team for them to have a lineup that can compete with the rest of the National League.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
Bill, less than 2 weeks, pitchers and catchers are going to be down in Sarasota, not Kissimmee this year, as we all know. So when you go to spring training, make sure you go to the right place, okay?
I'll try.
Absolutely. But you got a chance this week also over on your Brave Central. Was it BraveCentral.com, right? What is the BraveCentral.com. You got a chance to talk with Ben Ingram, which I've really enjoyed his voice and his kind of growing into the role that I think one day may be a more prominent role with the Braves. But y'all talked about the biggest questions going into spring training. What were a couple of those that you and him came up with?
Well, he's like I am, and he's curious about the rotation. And, you know, again, to be on the fence with these things, we're not supposed to be on the fence with things like the topics of this nature is with what we do. But look, we all know who I wanted for the rotation. I mean, everybody listening to the show knows who I wanted for the rotation. I don't even have to mention his name. Mm-hmm. But you know, and Ben wanted him too. And Ben agreed that, you know, this had been rumored for 2 years and still shocked it didn't happen, as I am. But you know, I like Cole Hamels, and I am a big Cole Hamels fan, but he's 36 and he's had shoulder issues. So how is that going to work out? I mean, I'm not worried about Soroka. I'm not worried about Fried. I don't think Fried may win 17 games this year, but he could still have an ERA around 4 and have a good year by all accounts. Fulte's a big question. We all know that. He could be good Fulte or bad Fulte. Which one will he be? You know, I am intrigued by Sean Newcomb's desire to go back to the rotation. He was very good last year as a reliever, but what can he do back in the rotation? He goes back in the rotation as the fifth starter and does what he did 2 years ago. That's not bad. I mean, he had an ERA near 4, and, I mean, these days, starting pitchers with ERA near 4 get $15 million, for crying out loud. But he, you know, if he does that, that could be good. I'm intrigued by Felix Hernandez. My expectations are low, but you know, we've seen things to happen before where pitchers get back on track, and I'm kind of drinking the Kool-Aid on what Alex Anthopoulos is saying about different league, better defense, you know, new team, you know, rejuvenated and all that, and he's kind of determined to come back and prove that he's got something left. I'm curious about that. So I don't think it's a dire situation by any means, the rotation. Would it have been better if they had had a Madison Bumgarner? Yeah, I think Ben agreed with that and brought that up before I could, although I think he reads my stuff, so he knew what I felt too. but you know, I think that's the biggest question we have. I don't think there's any question at all about the bullpen. And to go into a season without a question about the bullpen for a change is very, very good. You know, we've had a lot of – I mean, last year, the biggest change on this team, you know, I look at things in two ways when you enter a season. How is a team on paper compared to what it looked like when it ended the season? And how is the team on paper compared to how it looked when it began the previous season? Well, look, there's going to be vast differences in both of those scenarios, right? But particularly when it comes to the bullpen, and particularly when it comes to comparing it to how it started in 2019, totally different situation there. And I think that's what people are most intrigued about. So, you know, I think Ben had the same questions we all did about how the rotation will shake out and you know, the flexibility of them for making some changes if it doesn't work out.
Another thing you wrote about this week is Christian Pache and Drew Waters both, but like Pache specifically, this is a good scenario, but what if he goes to spring training next month and into March and just tears it up down there? Is there a chance that he could be on the major league roster sooner rather than later, or have they already stacked that outfield so much that that may not even be an option this year? What did you write about Pache?
Well, that's going to be very interesting because, look, here's the situation Alex Anthopoulos is in. For all the questions that I think we all have about payroll and being able to add to the payroll and what flexibility do you have and are you just not signing these players because Liberty Media is being cheap and all these things that the fans, I think, are running through their mind, we do need to remember the Atlanta Braves have three very good young players who are unproven yet. And I'll include Austin Riley in that three, and Christian Pache and Drew Waters. Okay, there are others like the two catchers and so forth, but let's just focus on those main three. I mean, Waters and Pache. Pache's the, I think, 12th best prospect in one of the polls, and 13 in the other. And Waters is 30 something, 36, I believe, in Baseball America. So these are two very top prospects here. And Drew Waters, at 20 years old, was the Southern League's MVP. These are very, very good prospects that in most situations you'd be waiting for them. But this is a team just wanting to win the World Series. So it's not as easy compared to, let's say, 2 years ago when the Braves were going into their season and we knew we could wait on Ronald Acuna to come up because we didn't think they were going to win 90 damn games in 2018. Let's be honest. We thought they'd go from 72 wins to maybe 80-something wins. But now it's changed. You know, it's a different mindset for the fans, for the players, for the staff, for the GM, because they want to win the World Series. They won 97 games last year. So the ability to wait on those players is, it's just a little bit more narrow. Sure, if Pache, I mean, he's not going to start the season with them, but if Pache or Waters go to AAA and just go Ronald Acuna, yeah, they may have to make a decision in May or June, and they may say, all right, we got Ozuna in left, we got Acuna, but are Markakis and Duvall doing good enough, or would Drew Waters or Christian Pache be better? So, yeah, it's something that I think weighs on Alex Anthopoulos' mind that while we're thinking about, well, they're just being cheap, are they really believing that this group of young players could be part of the equation in 2020, and it's something we got to remember.
Can I ask you a philosophical question? This is kind of a deeper
here
one here.
Buckle up, Bill.
Yeah.
Here we
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of a good way of putting this. All right, so, and you go in the locker room and when you go to the games and that kind of thing, and you see the way the players are situated and where they are and that kind of thing. So last year in the postseason, you know, Freddie had a He had a terrible postseason. And I guess we can attribute some of that to the fact that he was hurt and the Braves just wouldn't say it. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. So, you know, there was the incident where Ronald Acuna didn't run out a ball, and that gathered a lot of talk. And then, you know, Freddie had a comment on it. And I guess just because he was asked, it wasn't like he just brought it up. I mean, he wasn't the only one, but... my question here is, philosophical part of it is, and this isn't just the Braves, you could answer this, I guess, for any clubhouse. Is there a Latin leader in the clubhouse and also an American leader in the clubhouse? Are there two, you know, how are the, like, do clubhouses get divided that way? And I did notice the Braves now have several Venezuelan players. And does that start to factor in as to who would be a guy that might be the Latin leader of the clubhouse versus the, you know, English-speaking leader of the clubhouse? I know this is a weird question, but I just didn't know what it was like for those guys. If you know, did Freddie tick off Ronald Acuna because he didn't run out his double? Or, you know, do the players have each other's backs? Or how does that kind of stuff kind of, you know, sit in a clubhouse?
I think it's a good question, and I think part of my answer is going to wonder about what Marcell Ozuna, as a 30-year-old big leaguer with experience, could do to help Ronald Acuna, because I don't think they had that Julio Franco type, if you will, Dave, that would have jumped Acuna's rear for what he's been doing. I mean, look, I'm not saying the Braves are giving up on trying to crack down on what Acuna is doing with his issues.
And believe me, this has nothing to do with that. I was just kind of curious. Yeah, I just was using that as an example.
But you know, you can only say things so many times, and I think Ozzy can say things to him. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if a veteran everyday player in the lineup, like Marcell Ozuna, who, from all accounts, is a very good clubhouse guy. I mean, you know, the Cardinals manager called the Braves manager and was just glowing terms and recommendations about how good of a clubhouse guy Ozuna is, which, when I heard that, the first thing I thought about, Dave, was Acuna. All right, maybe Ozuna can be that presence you're talking about, because I think there is a difference. I think Latin players are going to listen to Latin players more than they're going to listen to
which I get.
Right. I mean, I think it's just human nature, you know, whether it's a communications gap or a respect factor or whatever. But yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. I'm really anxious to see the Ozuna factor, if you will, in that clubhouse after hearing how good he was. You know, it was weird because obviously kind of curious about how he would fit in for a one-year deal. We know how Donaldson was last year. But I just didn't think, for example, that Freeman or Donaldson, they could have talked to their blue in the face and to Acuna. And it would have been different to have a presence like, you know, and Eddie Perez was good when he was on the staff, on the coaching staff, about being that kind of Latin enforcer, if you will. And I think, you know, I mean, Ron Washington and some of the other coaches can do it. Brian Snicker, God knows, did it until he was blue in the face. But, yeah, I want to see if Ozuna is that type of player you're talking about. They can, because, look, we know Ozzy Albies and Acuna are great, great friends. They're brothers.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ozzy's,
and their enthusiasm is awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But Ozzy's his contemporary. You know, Ozzy's not someone who's been around much longer than Acuna has, for crying out loud. But can Ozuna, as someone who's 30 and has even been in the league for, what, 6-7 years, you know, can that be a factor, not only for Acuna, but just to have that veteran presence that those players can look up to? So, you know, every year, look, the clubhouse in Atlanta early on last year with Donaldson was not good. It took them a while to warm up to him and for him to warm up to them. And then after a while, obviously, it got very good.
Yeah.
It took a little time, but, you know, I think that's something that you go into every season. Brian Snicker probably has to worry about that, just like Kirby Smart has to worry about every year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Am I going to have the leadership I had in 2017? Probably not, but I hope it'll be close, right? So, yeah, I think it's a good question and something we're going to have to watch this season to see and watch Ozuna. You know, a lot of times when you watch baseball games and you watch the scene in the clubhouse, we know, you know, the enthusiasm, like you said, Dave, of Acuña and Ozzy, but where is the leadership? Where is someone getting on to them if they need to? You know, Julio Franco, I mean, hell, they were afraid of Julio Franco. They thought he'd kill him.
He was juiced on Jesus. So you got him, yeah. That was the thing.
You know, but that kind of player is good for a clubhouse, and I hope Ozuna can be that player for this team this year. I really do.
You know, and clubhouse leadership and just the personality of your locker room, it's not anything you can sit there and look at or hold on to, but it's a real thing. And, you know, sometimes you get blessed with it, and sometimes, like you said, it may either never happen in a season or take a while to develop. And I'm just, you know, and maybe Felix Hernandez, maybe he brings something
right
to that, you know.
That's right.
He's another one.
You don't know.
Yeah.
And Felix Hernandez obviously was the king in Seattle.
Yeah.
He ain't the king in Atlanta. You
right.
know, so. But that may be a good thing, though, to see how he adjusts to this role, because even as he was struggling the last 3 years, he was still the king,
yep.
You know? And it's good to be the king, I've heard. But it's like now that he's in Atlanta, he's battling for a job. But if he gets that job, I mean, that just intrigues me, you know? And I hope that he pitches well enough, to be honest with you, that if he's not the starter, that Newcomb wins the job. But I mean, how great would it be if he's the long reliever? Maybe that. I mean, I talked last year about. I call it the bridge pitcher, and Marty Reed called it the bullpen coach, the Braves. He called it the utility pitcher, and Josh Tomlin was kind of like that last year for the Braves. You know, I think he only started one game, but I mean, he was a former starter who had that long relief role that you could use two or three times a week if you needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Felix Hernandez is a former starter. If he doesn't beat out Sean Newcomb, could he be that role? But if he is in that role, David, how good could that be for that team to have someone who was on track, at least, for the Hall of Fame at one point to be on that team? I mean, that's something I'm really anxious to see once we get to spring training and into the season, how that plays out.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I got to ask
you that
question.
Cool. I like that. I very much so.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to steal that from my show today.
Please do. I want to hear what other people say about that, too. Because I think it's a real thing, even though you can't see it or hold it. It's a real thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it can be scoffed at by people.
Yep.
But I've seen it. I mean, there were a couple years during the run, I think 2000. I think 2000, maybe 98. I think 98 was the Brett Boone year, where it was not good.
Mm-hmm.
It was just not good. And did that play a role? Probably. You know, I mean, were they beaten by a better team? Probably. But did the clubhouse not being as good as it was in 95? Let's just say, did that play a role in them not living up to expectations, even though they had talent? Probably. You know, and look, we can look back 6-7 years ago when they had B.J. Upton. Did the horrific play of B.J. Upton, even though that was a talented team, but he was making $15 million a year but hitting .190, play a role in that team not really living up to expectations, even past him being bad? Probably so, because that's not easy to have a player that's being paid $15 million being that awful. So there's no doubt it matters.
You're the best, my man, Bill. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the conversation.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You guys.
We'll get
Thanks,
you next
later.
Week. All right. Bill Shanks. And, I just wanted to kind of ask him about that. And again, you can catch Bill at BraveCentral.com. And he's also Superstations.com as well.